And welcome in. It is Glenn Clark Radio, a Tuesday edition of the program for March 14th. And yes, with all the snow, not able to make it in. But that's why we thought ahead. And we said, we're going to have a show prepared for you, and I'm really happy about it. We're going to be doing a lot of college basketball on today's show. A little bit later on, we're going to talk to Sam Cassell Jr. From Iona, who is in the NCAA tournament this year. Baltimore native, yes, he is Sam Cassell's son, obviously. And he has made the NCAA tournament, averaging double digits for Iona this season after a long journey. Almost went to Maryland, UConn, now ultimately at Iona. So we'll talk to Sam Cassell a little bit later on in the program. But we're going to kick things off by chatting with our friend, our college basketball guru, and the bracketologist for the Washington Post. You follow him on Twitter, at Discourse. He is Mr. Patrick Stevens, and he joins us now. Patrick, it's good to talk to you, sir. Thank you for taking some time. I hope that you are surviving the winter hurricane of 2017.
Yes, it'll be nice to get this thing to come and pass. Oh, you're talking about the actual weather as opposed to the whole Selection Sunday and the aftermath. Yeah, it'd be nice to get that over with too. By the way, Sam Cassell Jr. It's strange. That is a name that simultaneously, you know, it makes you feel old in different ways.
Yeah.
It feels, obviously, his dad.
Right,
you
and then this
played
process.
Played State in the early 90s and played in the NBA for a long time.
Yeah.
But it feels like he signed with Maryland eons ago.
This is not a joke. When we were talking about it, we honestly said to each other, is there any chance that he was actually recruited by Gary Williams? we were trying to do the math in our head of how long it's been. It hasn't been that long. But you're right. It does feel as though it's been a forever process. And, this reminds me of Ashton Pankey, who ended up well for him after he moved on. It's ended up well for Sam Cassell. Ultimately, he gets this opportunity to go to the NCAA tournament with Iona team that, you know, look, that's one of those teams that you're going to look at again because that's a really good team.
It's a really good offensive team.
Okay, fair.
Is what it is.
And I don't love their matchup, but I feel like it's the type of game that you're at least going to think about for a second as you're filling out your brackets.
Yeah, I mean, look, Oregon's going to have to score like 80 points to win that game. Now, they very well may score 105, but they're going to have to score 80 to get Iona out of the tournament.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's talk about everything. Let's start with just the brackets in general. The consensus seems to be, there's no controversy here. People are attempting to paint a controversy with Syracuse that doesn't exist. They weren't very good. That's just the end of it. That the committee, while the seeding appears to be certainly questionable, the actual teams that made the field, they got the right ones.
Yeah, I think that it was a pretty clear-cut set of choices, especially after Rhode Island won the A-10. I thought there was that one last spot that maybe you would have done something different with, but the reality is I think Rhode Island might have had that spot anyway. And you look at them, the Syracuse example. What amazes me is that just last year, Syracuse got into the tournament because it won quality games away from home. And they didn't this year, and that's why they got left out. It's like everybody forgot why they got in the first place last year.
Right.
Of course, you're going to have people that are going to, you know, act like, I don't know how they don't comprehend it, but I'm like, oh, well, it was because Boeheim was missing for no, that didn't matter. And it didn't matter then, and it didn't matter in retrospect. What mattered was that they won at Duke, and they beat UConn and Texas A&M on a neutral court. And this year, you know, they went 2-11 away from home and lost 7 of those games by at least 10 points, 6 of them by at least 14 points. They lost to the terrible Boston College team. They got run off the floor all over the place by Carolina, by Louisville, by Notre Dame, they didn't belong in the tournament. They just weren't very good.
Right.
And so, if you want to latch on to anybody on the outside of the field, latch on to Illinois State, which went 27-6 and ran through the Missouri Valley. Didn't have a whole lot of oomph at the top of its profile, but, you know, deep down, I think they would have acquitted themselves very well in the Field of 68. And whatever you do, don't condemn them if they do what teams like St. Bonaventure last year and Colorado State 2 years ago did, which was just miss out on the tournament, be ticked off, and then just
lose their opener
out
right
in the first round of the NIT.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason a team like that is going to be upset. Although I will say that based on the committee's decision making, they shouldn't be surprised that they got left out. Is it fair? That's up for debate.
Right.
But it's not a surprise that the committee went in the direction that it did.
I agree with everything you just said. If there was a team you really wanted to get behind, it's Illinois State, and it's about what's the nature. Is the tournament more fun if you have Illinois State instead of having, you know, Wake Forest or having Kansas State?
Southern Cal or
right,
Providence, or
sure,
State.
Yeah. So that I have no problem with. Is it a more fun tournament if a team like Illinois State's involved? Yeah, I think there's some like Cinderella rooting interest there that would make. But it's even hard to feel bad for them because ultimately, as you pointed out, what did they really do that made them tournament worthy? Like, what did they really? They beat Wichita State once this season. That's what they did. And that's sort of the end of it.
Yeah, and you know, it would have been. I think Middle Tennessee would have been a better cause to get behind.
Yeah.
Had they not won Conference USA, they clearly wouldn't have made the tournament if they had not won their conference tournament. And so, I'm glad they did. I think they're a fascinating team, but they would have probably been a better team to rally around, and you would have had a better case thanks to them beating Vanderbilt and beating Middle Tennessee.
The worst seeding
beating Wilmington. I'm sorry.
Right. The worst seeding decision was what?
If we take out Middle Tennessee, which was two lines off on my projection, I was really befuddled by South Carolina.
Yeah.
I did not see them as – I saw them as, frankly, a team that might be in a play-in game, and they're a 7 seed. And they kind of remind me of Oregon State last year, which really didn't do a whole lot to deserve being a 7 seed and promptly lost. I think they lost to VCU last year. And I think that what we get out of that decision is South Carolina's really stingy defense taking on Marquette's monster offense. But given the fact that South Carolina has sputtered down the stretch, losing 6 of its last 9, I think that what we'll ultimately see is a Duke versus Wojo second round game. And that's what we'll get out of that seeding decision.
Yeah, that's all right. Are you on board with, you know, the Duke, despite winning the ACC, beating Carolina twice as a 2, while Carolina with 7 losses is a 1.
I'm fine with that. Completely fine with that. I thought you could make the argument either way. And at the end of the day, I tend not to get as worked up about who's a 1 seed versus who's a 2 seed.
Right. ultimately, that's not going to make much of a difference.
You know, they're both. But either way, both those teams are going to start their tournament in Greenville.
Yeah.
You know, for Duke. You know, they're playing. They get to go to Madison Square Garden for the first week or the second weekend now. Like, I mean, that's their second home.
Right. So, they play games there like every day, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's their home court.
Yeah.
Like, they have more fans there than anywhere. Like, I mean, I pointed out to some people this week, like, there were more Duke fans at Barclays Center than there ever were in Greensboro.
That's funny. That's really funny.
Like,
but no, you're right.
That is their New York, New Jersey home base.
It's their brand, right? Yeah, no question, man. No question. So that's a great point. That ends up working out really well for them to avoid that way. Anything else just from a seeding perspective that you thought this was a little fishy? Maybe, and I'll throw in Maryland still managing to get a 6 seed despite how things went for them down the stretch.
The Big Ten ordering was a little odd. I mean,
yeah.
If you told me Purdue was going to be ahead of Wisconsin, that's fine. You told me Minnesota, and even Michigan ahead of Wisconsin, that's fine. But to get Maryland in there too, and to have Wisconsin basically be the 5th Big Ten team, that's a little unexpected, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, look, Maryland got. It's easy to tell why Maryland got what it got, because it did a lot of its best work on the road, and it was a really good team away from home. Its flop in the Big Ten tournament, notwithstanding. You know, they're fortunate to be a 6 seed. That doesn't mean that they're going to get out of the first weekend. I think that Florida State will be a monstrously difficult matchup for them, just with their depth and their size. And that's assuming that Maryland
right,
will navigate Xavier, which
Xavier.
Is no sure thing, in a 6-11 game come Thursday.
So let's get into that. Patrick Stevens is with us here on Glenn Clark Radio. Let's get into Thursday. And look, again, as far as Maryland's concerned, this is about as happy as you can be with the way this played out. You get a 6 seed. You face a Xavier team that has been reeling down the stretch, that has been playing without their leading scorer, Edward Sumner. So, like, there's good stuff there. There's stuff that you're happy about. The problem is, what reason do you have confidence that Maryland can take advantage of those things?
Well, the reason you'd have is that when you look at Xavier in its last 10 games, it won 3 games, and 2 of them were against DePaul. So they had that nice victory over Butler, which really kind of saved their free fall into play-in territory. But they really haven't done a whole lot of late. And so, you know, they're tough, and you know they're going to defend you, and you know they're going to be a pain, but it's not an impossible matchup. As good as the likes of Trevon Blewett are and J.P. McCura and guys like that, I mean, they had Malcolm Bernard, who you might remember from a one-year stopover at Florida A&M.
Yeah, right.
So he is a grad transfer, was supposed to end up at Richmond. Instead, ends up at Xavier and has been a really important piece for them this season. So, you know, I think that Xavier's tough. It's not a vintage Xavier team by any stretch of the imagination. If Maryland plays well, it can move on. But, you know, it's also fair to wonder, how well is Maryland going to play at any point? You know, you've seen them survive a couple games later in the season, the Rutgers and Michigan State games. But, you know, Maryland is still a team now that is 4-6 in its last 10 outings.
Yeah.
You know, 4-6 since the start of February. And prone to those offensive droughts that make you wonder what actually the identity is in a lot of ways. So I suspect that they managed to get through the first game, but the size that Florida State brings to bear is going to be the time that is going to lead to a time that Maryland is as acutely aware of how much it misses Michael Chakovsky as at any point that he has been on the sideline this season. He would have really helped them out in a game like that. And if that game gets played, you're going to see Florida State in a lot of ways doing a lot of what it wants to do on the inside.
Let me go back to Xavier for a second. The issue that a lot of people brought up is Xavier's zone and what Maryland's done against the zone this season. How much of that should be a concern?
Yeah, I mean, they play some zone and probably a little bit more down the stretch. The other thing they do, you know, they've got the history with the pack line in that program. So, you know, there's also the matter of a defense that's pretty good at keeping people away from the basket. But, you know, for Maryland, the shooting questions were probably a little more acute earlier in the season than they were late, but it's not as if they've been getting consistent play from very many guys down the stretch. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Maryland is probably, you know, if you looked at it from the start of the season and said this group is going to get a 6 seed, most people rationally would have signed up for that.
Oh, yeah.
They should have. They
yeah.
should have. But when you also look at it as, are they playing as well as you thought they would be playing at this time of year? Probably not. And so just the overall level of play at this stage, I think it would make anyone wonder how long they're realistically going to be able to stick around, regardless of what sort of opponent they're playing and what sort of defense that opponent rolls out. I mean, I think the concerns with Maryland have much more to do with them than what they're going to be facing on the other side of the floor.
Let me go back real quick one time. You brought up potential second round with Florida State. Seth Davis in particular was sure banging the drum for Florida Gulf Coast last night. And because of their past, you know, history in the NCAA tournament, they will probably be a popular upset pick. Is there anything to that? Is this Florida Gulf Coast team really capable of not just beating Florida State, but as like Seth Davis suggested, making a run to the Sweet 16?
I don't think they're that good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a solid team. And I don't want to disrespect what they've accomplished, having won the Atlantic Sun the last couple of years. But Florida Gulf Coast is going to have even more severe issues dealing with Florida State's size than a Maryland would. And so, you know, you look at Florida Gulf Coast, and they obviously have had a very fine season, 26-7. But I don't see them as good a shooting team as they are. They're quite good. You know, they give up and they defend the three really well, but they're not great at dealing with the inside. They don't force a ton of turnovers. I tend to think that Florida State is going to do a lot of damage to them just through their sheer athleticism.
He is Patrick Stevens. We're going to grab a break right here. We'll be right back in with more. It's Glenn Clark Radio. Okay, we're just going to roll right through that. Sorry, I want to do that for tomorrow.
That's okay.
Yep. Back in here with Patrick Stevens, of course, a bracketologist for the Washington Post, as well as a college sports guru on Twitter, at Discourse, D1S Course. He joins us here on GCR. Patrick, let's get away from Maryland and take a look at some other things when it comes to the bracket. And I think one of the things that people have pointed out is that this year it seems like maybe the top, you know, whatever the number you want to put in, 8, 10, 12, something like that, have been somewhat interchangeable. So it's a strong group at the top, but it feels like maybe the threes might have an opportunity to get maybe as many teams in the Final Four as the ones do. Is that fair to say about this overall top group?
Yeah, I don't think that's too out of the realm of possibility. I mean, I think that you probably see a drop-off somewhere probably around the five line in general, you know, that where you start to you go from having like Virginia and Iowa State, and then you get down to the sixth line and you see a team like a Creighton sitting there, and a Maryland sitting there, quite frankly. So I think there's a divide somewhere right around there, but I'm not sure there's a huge drop-off at any other point before that. I mean, I think Villanova and Kansas were main teams that have pretty high floors, but they're not unstoppable by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to see, you know, I think other people are much more enamored with UCLA than I am. I think that they're quite exciting and quite fun to watch, and I also think that history suggests you can't trust the man on the sideline in March very much. but you know, that's the obvious three seed that if you're going to sit there and try to get behind, it would be the Bruins. You know, I don't know if Baylor, who hasn't been playing all that great, would be somebody that you right. really want to hitch your wagon to. Oregon obviously has injury issues at this point, and that makes them a little bit of a concern. And then you got Florida State, who is extremely athletic and very, very deep, but is also not all that great away from home. They kind of become a different team when they're not in their building or at least around their fans. And so I don't know if the three line's the best example to give there.
Okay, so what if I included like West Virginia at the four line?
Yeah, I mean, I like West Virginia a lot too, and I like Notre Dame. I mean, yeah. if you put me on the spot, I'll take Notre Dame out of that bracket.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
I think that they, you know, it's a nasty little sub-regional for them having to deal with Princeton and then probably West Virginia.
Right.
But they have the poise and the patience to handle both of those styles. And you know, this is the Mike Bray get old and stay old philosophy. And you look up, and sure enough, they have two juniors and two seniors that are starting for them.
How is that always possible? How can they constantly have that? It's insane.
Well, he is really good at identifying players that fit his system. Like, he's really good at it. And the other thing is he empowers those guys on offense. You know, he is not a micromanager at the offensive end. They're just ready to go. It's not a roll the ball out type thing either. Like, they are extremely prepared and they know what they're doing. And they obviously have one of the most fascinating players in the country in Bonzi Colson, a 6'5" center who just basically, if he gets the ball down in the paint, it's 2 points. So I really like them a lot. They've been to the Elite Eight the last 2 years, and you look at that bracket and I think it's the weakest bracket of the bunch. I mean, I don't know if we completely trust Gonzaga. I mean, I think they're pretty good, but I don't think they're as good as the other one seed. You know, how good is Arizona? I think that question's still out there as well. So it is not hard to imagine Notre Dame getting itself on a roll and maybe punching through and getting that first Final Four since 1978 this year.
It certainly seems like they have that type of team. Let me touch on a couple others that I feel like people are intrigued by. When it comes to this bracket, you mentioned Middle Tennessee State, and they're a 12 seed. Nothing is easy, right? But when you look at that, are they capable of maybe not just winning a game, but are they the type of team that might be capable of making a run in this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they can get past North Carolina in the Sweet 16.
But yeah.
You look at Minnesota, who's a very good defensive team, maybe a little suspect at the offensive end, and you look at Middle Tennessee, which junks up defenses like nobody's business. I mean, they just, I watched a good chunk of the Conference USA title game the other night, and they're just mixing up defenses, different kinds of presses, different kinds of looks. and they're veteran and they know what they're doing, and Giddey Potts is a guy that can score 30 getting off the bus. And so, you know, I think Minnesota's in some serious trouble there. And then you get into Butler versus Winthrop in the other game in that pod, you know, that could be an upset too. I mean, Winthrop's pretty darn good.
Right.
Now Butler, you know, they beat Villanova twice, but they've also shown some vulnerability. And they're not completely impervious to an upset. So, you know, if you were to try to say, where are you going to get two double-digit seeds playing each other? I mean, that's the one that I would zero in on in Milwaukee.
Wow.
And I think Middle Tennessee is an excellent team, and I would expect them to win at least one, and would not be surprised if they won twice to get out of Milwaukee.
I feel like SMU is a team that I'm hearing a lot about right now, and a lot of people are kind of jumping on there, and maybe not to get past Duke, but particularly a lingering second-round SMU-Baylor matchup with a Baylor team that's been struggling recently. It feels like there's a lot of people that are kind of on SMU in the early.
Yeah, I can understand that. I would tell you the team I'm kind of fascinated by there is Providence.
Really?
You know, they have Tyron Cartwright is one of the best point guards I've seen this year. And you know, Providence is a team that has played better later in the season. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, you look at them and you go, oh my gosh, these guys lost at Boston College and at Baylor. You know, there's a shudder that goes down your spine thinking about a team that managed to do that still made the tournament.
Yeah.
But, you know, they rattled off six in a row before losing to Creighton in the Big East tournament. They're playing well. And that six in a row included Butler, Xavier, Creighton, Marquette. I mean, that was not pushover city by any stretch of the imagination. Now, that's a rough deal for them, having to go play Southern Cal and then move on to face an SMU team that's very good, not deep, and I'm curious to see how the tournament affects them. Do they run into a tightly officiated game? At the same time, how much do the longer television timeouts benefit them? But I do agree with the general sentiment that Baylor is a vulnerable number three seed. They're not a dysfunctional bunch like last year, the team that lost to Yale in the first round.
Right.
And we had the famous
that was the rebounding, right?
What a rebound!
Oh,
is.
It was amazing. That was so amazing.
And you could sense, as silly as the question was, that there was some underlying dysfunction.
Yeah, we don't really want to be here. Yeah.
You know, but that's not the case this year. They just played really, really well up through mid to late January, and they haven't played as well since then. So they probably, you know, Jonathan Motley's fantastic. You know, Baylor's going to have the edge on the inside against just about anybody they play. But SMU could cause them problems, and I think Providence could cause them problems.
Game that looks like a total dud in the first round that is better than people realize it is.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I like Miami, Michigan State, even though State's not a remotely not a remotely inspiring team. I don't think anybody thinks Michigan-Oklahoma State's going to be a dud, but there's not going to be any defense played in that game whatsoever.
Okay.
At all.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, you know, you have Northwestern and Vanderbilt in the all-nerds game.
Right, right.
And, you know, I think that if you get a Cincinnati-Wake Forest game, I think that could be fun. You know, because you've got different identities there. Wake Forest really wants to push things. Cincinnati's a team that is going to try to control the tempo, maybe not as much as some past Cincinnati teams, but that has the sense to me of a game that you could see going right down to the wire, even if nobody's all that excited about it.
Obviously, I need a full breakdown of Mount St. Mary's first-round matchup against New Orleans. I need all of the X's and O's that you can give me about that one.
I don't know New Orleans that well. I watched about 8 minutes of the Southland final the other night, but they are maybe the best story in the tournament. A program that was obviously damaged terribly by the impact of Hurricane Katrina. Do you remember that Buzz Williams actually spent a year as the head coach?
I didn't remember that at all.
He spent a year at New Orleans and then went to Marquette as an assistant and got the Marquette job when Tom Crean left for Indiana, but they were threatening to dip down. They actually had started the process to drop out of Division I and reverse course, And here they are, like 5 or 6 years later, and they're in the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1996. You might remember one of the 1990 stars of New Orleans basketball, Irvin Johnson, but not that.
Oh,
Irvin
right,
Johnson.
Right, right. Yep, I do remember that. Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, Irvin Johnson, the 6'11", dude, he was so good. He was such a good. He was such a good mid-major player, and you know, he was really an excellent presence for them. Now they don't have an Irvin Johnson anymore. And they turned the ball over way, way, way too much, which is a terrible matchup for a team that has to go play Mount St. Mary's,
right.
Which is more than happy to turn you over, over and over and over again to lead to easy buckets. So I think, you know, the other thing here, too, is that New Orleans doesn't force any turnovers. It's amazing. Like they do force a ton of turnovers. I apologize. My eyes are a little shot here. After reading a bunch of things, so this could be a wild first game in the tournament. I like Mount. I've seen Mount St. Mary's enough. I've probably seen them 5 or 6 times this year, and I like them to be able to at least get one win and move out of the first day. They're into the real first day of the tournament and go play Villanova. You know, Elijah Long has had a conference player of the year type of season for them. The younger brother of Naz Long. Of Iowa State, and Junior Robinson definitely makes my list of favorite players in the country.
How tall? 5'5"? Yeah, that's crazy.
He's fantastic, and I would tell you that one of the more interesting players, you know, really really bright guy by the name of Chris Ray, who's their power forward, who you know has really developed in a lot of ways. I mean, he was so raw about a year and a half or so ago, and has really developed into this kind of Swiss Army knife of a guy who. He'll score, you know, his 6 or 7 points a game or whatever, but he does so many things and is very, very skilled and understands everything so well. And so I'm looking forward to the possibility of him getting to go up against a Villanova or somebody like that. And understand this much. If Mount St. Mary's gets through to that game, they will be the least intimidated 16 seed ever, with the possible exception of Texas Southern this year. You look back, remember, Mount St. Mary's began the season with a road trip that covered 19 days.
Right.
It went to West Virginia, Iowa State, Minnesota, George Mason, Southern Illinois, Texas, Arlington, Michigan, and Arkansas, and did not return home at all.
And they beat Mason.
And they beat Mason.
Yeah.
Chris Ray, Ray hit a, he got an inbounds pass, and Mason made a defensive mistake, and he had a clear pass to the basket and went in for a dunk. So this is a Mount St. Mary's team that, even though it took its lumps during that stretch, was largely pretty competitive in there. And after that 1-11 start, they've since won 18-22. I think they're pretty good. Not good enough to be Villanova,
right?
But certainly plenty capable of taking advantage of a team like New Orleans that commits a lot of turnovers.
Can I assume that you have a CBI game in your future this week?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
You know, it's a shame that all three of the CBI / CIT games
right.
in the area are all being played at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. UMBC gets a home game against Fairfield in the CIT. GW plays Toledo in the CBI down in Foggy Bottom, and Loyola makes the trip with a losing record. One of five of the 16 teams in the CBI have a losing record this year. Loyola makes the trip over to Fairfax to take on George Mason. I think that's ultimately where I'm going to end.
Hey, man, losing teams go to bowl games too. So I mean,
they sure
you know,
do.
That's the way that,
you know,
that's the way it goes.
The CBI is definitely a pay-for-play entity.
Right.
And you know, it used to be they were able to draw, you know, team. They pretty reliably were getting a team out of the team or two out of the Pac-12 every year. And
I remember Oregon one year. I remember they were in it one year. Absolutely.
Who's that?
Oregon, I think the
Oregon won it one year. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, Oregon State was a regular in that event.
Yeah,
winning record or no.
You know what? This will be fun. Hang on, I got this because so I ended up watching the selection show with two guys that we both know yesterday. My buddy Aaron Oster and John Wilmot. I watched it with them. I'm going to give you this because the good news is I can edit it out if it embarrasses you and you don't want me to. All right.
Okay.
This is the CBI this year. Is celebrating its 10th anniversary. And to do so, they have listed 24 great players in CBI history that they're voting for to make the all-CBI team for 10 years. Can you name any of the players on the list of 24 that have been nominated for the all-CBI team?
Lee you got to figure Doug McDermott's on that.
There you go. Winner, winner. Winner, winner. Nailed it. Doug McDermott, 2011.
I mean, absolutely. That one was kind of a soft.
I had totally forgotten. I had completely forgotten that they had played in the CBA.
Did they get... I'm trying to think here. Who was on the Pitt team that was really good? Was Talib Zana on there?
It's not. No, wrong one. You're right there. You're right there.
Okay. I'm blanking on who the Pitt guy was.
It was Lamar Patterson.
It was Lamar Patterson?
Lamar Patterson was the one.
How could I forget about Lamar Patterson? Right. He led me to an ACC fantasy basketball.
Oh, how about that? There is a Virginia player from 2008.
Tom Singletary, maybe?
No. A good one, though. It's a good player. Guy that's had a good NBA career.
Huh. Was it Mike Scott?
Mike Scott's the one. Two VCU players.
Did we get to see... Joey Rodriguez,
absolutely is one.
Okay.
The other one really good. The other one was an NBA player too.
Oh, was it? It was too late for Maynor.
No, not Maynor. Yeah.
It's too late for Maynor. I'm blank. Was it? It wasn't a Burgess. Was it?
It was Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders
was the other one. But, yep, there you go. I don't have to edit it out because I didn't embarrass you because, of course, I couldn't possibly embarrass you. There's no way that I could do that.
Was there a George Mason rep on there?
No George Mason rep on the list. There are some other, like, well-known names on the list. Kenneth Faried is on the list.
Okay.
A.J. Hammond from Purdue is on the list. Justin Holliday from Washington. Daniel House from Houston. T.J. McConnell is on the list, who is having a remarkable NBA career. Like, it's absurd what that guy's doing. Larry Nance, obviously from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Quincy Pondexter is on the list as well. So it's a pretty – there's a lot of names that you look back and you're like, yeah, how about that? All right, sir. I appreciate it. Patrick was a hero this week and worked around our schedule so we could do this to make it happen. Are you headed to anywhere this weekend, or what's the story?
Maybe if there's a CIT game at UMBC over the weekend, maybe. But the combination of finances and geography were not very kind.
Yeah, not
this year.
Not ideal. Not ideal.
You know, and we throw the weather in.
Yeah.
You know, even if I had gotten a little greedy and thought, gee, maybe it'd be fun to drive to Buffalo.
Right.
I think the weather has pretty much disabused me of any thoughts like that.
I certainly understand that. All right, so give Patrick a follow on Twitter, @Discourse, and he will be keeping you updated on everything going on. And what was the final total for you this year, seed line-wise? How'd you do?
Had all 68 teams in, 37 seeded correctly, 60 within a line.
That's pretty good. Pretty freaking good.
So... that was compared to last year. It was 65 in, 37 seated correctly, 62 within a line. So better in some ways, not better in others.
Still pretty good, man. That's still a pretty good performance on your part. All right, sir. Stay warm. Appreciate it, and we will talk to you again real shortly. All right.
All right. Take care. Thanks for having me.
All right. Appreciate Patrick doing that for us. It is a Tuesday edition of Glenn Clark Radio. It's also brought to you by Chick-fil-A Nottingham Square. I bet you're regretting today that you didn't go to Chick-fil-A Nottingham Square yesterday and get a nugget tray, which is just going to make everybody that did it so much happier as they're stuck inside today. Don't forget, they still have Fish for Lent every Friday between now and April 15th. You can get a fish sandwich, maybe a deluxe, or you can go without bread and just get a couple fish fillets. Chick-fil-A Nottingham Square, 5198 Campbell Boulevard, in the White Marsh area. Get over there today. We come back in. Kyle Ottenheimer is going to chat with Sam Cassell Jr., Baltimore's own, now in the NCAA tournament with Iona, getting ready to face Oregon. That's next. It's a Tuesday edition of Glenn Clark Radio.
Lacrosse season is getting underway. For the best coverage of all the area's high school lacrosse teams, sign up for PressBox's High School Lacrosse Newsletter, presented by PNC. The newsletter previews the big high school matchups, plus college recruiting updates, top 10 polls, and tracks how former high school stars are doing now with their college teams. To sign up, visit PressBoxOnline.com/lax_weekly. And for the best coverage of high school and college lacrosse in Maryland, stick with PressBoxOnline.com.
Pitchers and catchers are heading down to Sarasota, but Section 336 is already in full swing. Section 336 is a Baltimore sports podcast made by fans for fans. Subscribe on iTunes and get ready for baseball season as Josh, Matt, and Bert from Section 336 start their fifth season of Orioles baseball. Find them at Section336.com. and follow them on Twitter at Section 336 Show.
The new edition of Press Box is available now. It's our spring training preview edition as David Ginsberg's cover story looks at pivotal young Orioles pitchers Kevin Gausman and Dylan Bundy. Plus, Rich Dubroff breaks down the projected 25-man roster and some key position battles for the Birds. Press Box is available for free at over 500 locations in the area, including 60 Royal Farm stores. You can also read the entire edition and see the best daily coverage of the Orioles, Ravens, and Terps at PressBoxOnline.com.
Our children's futures start at a very young age, and Catholic schools prepare them for that future. Academic excellence with the belief that all students will succeed. A balanced curriculum, integrating music and arts, foreign language, and Catholic faith, while challenging students in the areas of science, math, and technology. Discover the Catholic school's difference. Please visit archbalt.org/schools. That's archbalt.org/schools for more information.
Hey, this is Stan the Fan, the old Wiley veteran of Baltimore baseball talk. While my fastball might not sit at 95 miles per hour anymore, we'll get by talking baseball just the same. Every Saturday morning from 10 to 12, Craig Heist will be co-hosting most weeks, and together, our baseball Rolodexes will provide you, the listeners, with some compelling talk about the national pastime, the teams you like to root for, and all the machinations going on within the 2017 baseball season. That's the Bat Around, every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Listen here or see us on Facebook Live.
Tweet us at Glenn Clark Radio. 21st Century Talk Radio at GlennClarkRadio.com. GlennClarkRadio.com.
Back in here now on Glenn Clark Radio, and joining us now is a name that Baltimore natives are certainly familiar with, or at least the first two parts of his name, but Iona Sam Cassell Jr. joins the program. And Iona, the Gales are fresh off of a NCAA tournament berth after beating Siena 87-86 March 6th. And Sam, how are you? I'm sure you're not doing too bad.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm just excited for the tournament.
So you had a, to say the least, a bit of a circuitous route to your final stop at Iona. You had a lot of stops on the way as you were originally committed to join the University of Maryland before you took a little bit of a few detours along the path. Can you tell me a little bit about the road that you took to finally end up there at Iona?
It definitely was a long journey, about three schools, so... Yeah, that's a long enough journey, but I landed here better late than never, so can't complain. Going to the NCAA tournament, I won a conference championship, so no complaining.
Absolutely. And did how much of a factor was the presence of Tim Clues over there at Iona? Was that a big determining factor in making this the place for your final season?
Yes. When I came here on my visit, Coach Clues and the coaches, rest of the coaching staff and the players just opened their arms and just accepted me. It felt like I was at home. It felt like I knew these guys my whole life. So I just knew Iona was a place for me as soon as I came on my visit.
No doubt. And then so coming from, I mean, as you said, three schools before this, what does it mean to you? What kind of validation does it provide to you to now be a double-digit scorer on a team that's got an NCAA tournament berth after having been along so many stops along the way and all that you've been through to this point?
Oh, that's wonderful. It feels great that I contributed good to this team. And just feels wonderful that I'm like you said, double-digit score on a team, and I'm going to the NCAA tournament.
Awesome. So what exactly comes with growing up in Baltimore, and do you carry a certain level of toughness with that when you play at the college level because of your roots in Baltimore?
Oh, you have to. You know, here, just one thing I come from Baltimore, toughness is something that you can't get rid of, because when you go back home, that's just something that you have to have, and confidence is the main thing. Keep your confidence has to always stay at an all-time high.
Do you think that played a factor in you being able to keep rebounding after switching schools and kind of really carving out your niche there at Iona?
Yeah, huge. Because if it doesn't break me, it makes me, so I just live by that, just the toughness of Baltimore. So everybody who... A lot of people that didn't make it to where I'm at from the city, I'm just doing it for them.
So tell me, give me a little bit of quick run through. What's the process like when you tell somebody your name when you're back in Baltimore? Sam Cassell Jr., What is the normal reaction that somebody in Baltimore has to that?
It's not a reaction. Everybody knows everybody in Baltimore. It's a small city, so it's not a huge reaction. Everybody just know me as Lil Sam. So it's just all love when I'm home in the city.
All right, well, talk a little bit about that. What was it like growing up as Sam Cassell's kid? Was it like pressure or the expectations? What were the advantages of being the son of a Baltimore basketball legend?
Oh, I could just say there's a lot of people growing up. A lot of people always try to basically, on the basketball side, they always try to basically come at me. And they're going to basketball, give me that best shot. That's what got me better each and every day, because I knew every day I stepped on the court, somebody's going to give me that best shot just because of the name that I had. And I got better from that.
So were you, like, being his son, were you around a lot of, like, NBA players when you were growing up?
When I went to visit him, yes. But majority of the time, I was back in Baltimore living with my mom, so.
Gotcha. So then take me back to the game against Siena. What was it like winning that game, 87-86, nationally televised, and then finally breaking through and getting to the tournament there?
Oh, it was wonderful. That game was a back-and-forth game. We scored, they scored, they scored, we scored. Then it went to overtime. In overtime, we looked in the huddle, we looked at each other and said, we're not going to lose this game. So our toughness came out. We just looked in each other's eyes. We just held each other accountable that we knew we was going to pull that game out.
So then now, looking ahead to the NCAA tournament, you guys are going to be facing off against Oregon, correct?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about the mindset entering that matchup. What are you guys looking at? What is something where you just want to play your game and set yourself up best to try and win?
Yes, just stick to playing Iona basketball. We know they're going to be a tough physical team. They got the Pac-12 player of the year, so that's going to be a tough challenge. We're just trying to get stops. Our defense is our main focus, though. Defense. That's what I preach in practice, and that's what Coach preached to us in practice. So we just take defense here this week. We want to get as many stops as we can possibly get.
Hey, Sam, Baltimore is definitely rooting for you back here, man. Excited to watch you play and get a chance to take on Oregon and see if you guys can make a name for yourselves over there at the NCAA tournament. Really appreciate you taking a second for us this morning, and look forward to watching you over there in the tournament, all right?
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Very cool. Appreciate Sam Cassell Jr. was able to give Kyle Ottenheimer just a couple of minutes as he prepares for the NCAA tournament. The Baltimore native who is going back is going there for the first time, actually, with Iona. So that was awesome. I know it was only a couple minutes, but appreciate him squeezing Kyle in a very busy week. All right, we still have more to do on a Tuesday edition of Glenn Clark Radio. Yes, it's our snow day coverage here on GCR. It is brought to you by our friends at Wendy's. You've heard us talking about it. I have no idea why it is that you haven't taken advantage of it. It is the Frosty Key Tag. That's right. Get to your neighborhood Wendy's today, and for just $1, you can get the 2017 Frosty Key Tag, and it means, as I've told you over and over and over and over again, it means that anytime you go to Wendy's between now and the end of the year, December 31st, you will get a free 6-ounce Junior Frosty with any purchase, whether that be as simple as purchasing a bottled water or purchasing a meal for you and the entire Iona basketball team. Whatever it is that you're doing, you can get a free 6-ounce Junior Frosty when you have that Wendy's Frosty Key Tag. There is no limit to how many times you can use your Wendy's Frosty Key Tag. You can use it 100 times if you so choose. You can use it 10 times. You can use it one time. You can use it 1,000 times. Use it as much as you possibly want. That $1, that's all that it costs to get all those 6-ounce Junior Frosties. It's going to the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So you're doing something really amazing on top of everything else. It is your Wendy's Frosty Key Tag. Get it today at your neighborhood Wendy's, and then take advantage the rest of 2017. So still to come, Kyle and I are actually going to get together in segment number 3 via the magic of technology, and we're going to chat a little bit more. I got some finish thises for him. Also, we're going to look at Totally Tubular for tonight, and we'll get a tidbit of the day. So that's what's coming up. Obviously, this morning, a reaction, the news, Maryland gets a number 3 seed in the women's tournament, and that is a bummer because they are in the same bracket as UConn, and that sucks. There is just no way around that. That sucks. Look, somebody's going to have to beat UConn at some point if anybody else wants to win the national championship. They've won 107 games in a row.
What else do you say? It is a tough, tough spot to put Maryland in. Hopefully Brenda Freeze's team will be up to the task. If they get that opportunity, they got to win some games first. Their first game is Friday at noon against Bucknell. I don't remember when it is the women's tournament switched from starting on Saturday to starting on Friday, but that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. It seems odd that you want to start on a day where there's, you know, 16 men's tournament games going on as well. It's a debate for another day, but so the Maryland women, as I was saying, 3 seed, they face Bucknell Friday afternoon at noon in College Park, and then should they reach the Elite Eight, and there's a lot of work to do to get there, they would likely have a date once again with UConn in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and this is a UConn team that they hung with but ultimately lost by 6-2 earlier on in the year, so we'll see what it is that they have up their sleeves should there be a rematch. We'll come back in, and Kyle and I will get back together, and we will chat a little bit more as we wind down a Tuesday edition, shortened version on a snow day of Glenn Clark Radio in partnership with PressBox and Monumental Sports.
Our children's futures start at a very young age, and Catholic schools prepare them for that future. Academic excellence with the belief that all students will succeed. A balanced curriculum, integrating music and arts, foreign language and Catholic faith, while challenging students in the areas of science, math, and technology. Discover the Catholic school's difference. Please visit archbalt.org/schools. That's archbalt.org/schools for more information.
Hi there, KZ here with Sarita the NFL Chick. Every Sunday from 10 a.m. to noon, you can hear us right here on PressBoxOnline.com/radio for the PressBox Fantasy and Reality Football Show. Sarita tries to keep me in check. I get a little shady every once in a while.
No, I just try to keep KZ in realistic world instead of you either stink or you're great.
It's all about fantasy. It doesn't matter what's real. It just doesn't.
Yes, because wins and losses don't matter, KZ.
They don't. Garbage time is winning time. That's all that matters. Anyway, you can listen to us, as I said, 10 a.m. to noon right here, PressBoxOnline.com/radio or /fantasy, whichever you're in the mood for.
NFL, college football,
10 a.m.
sometimes baseball.
10 a.m. to noon every Sunday.
The PressBox Fantasy and Reality Football Show, PressBoxOnline.com/radio.
The new edition of PressBox is available now. It's our spring training preview edition as David Ginsberg's cover story looks at pivotal young Orioles pitchers Kevin Gausman and Dylan Bundy. Plus, Rich Dubroff breaks down the projected 25-man roster and some key position battles for the Birds. PressBox is available for free at over 500 locations in the area, including 60 Royal Farm stores. You can also read the entire edition and see the best daily coverage of the Orioles, Ravens, and Terps at PressBoxOnline.com.
URL. You are listening to Glenn Clark Radio. Clark Radio at glennclarkradio.com.
All right, so yeah, we got to do this last segment over the phone, Ducks, and I apologize, but such is life. Unfortunately, Kyle is not living in an area where they have HD service just yet, and we'll get through that. But we got one more segment to go on. What we imagined was going to... What's that?
Does that make me like a lesser technologically inclined individual?
Yes. I mean, not necessarily because I cited that, but just because of the reality of your situation. If I can call...
No, like, I requested no HD when I got this.
Oh, monitor. You requested no HD.
I won't stoop to that level, yeah.
The amazing thing is the HD sounds so good that we could literally do an entire show over it. But sadly, you don't have that. So we'll just do this. So, we recorded everything today expecting there to be a ton of snow. Obviously, there wasn't a ton of snow, but PressBox decided to close today. So that's the reason why today's show was in podcast form. And then we'll be back tomorrow with a live show for you. In the meantime, real quick, Kyle, let's do a couple of finish thises. Finish this.
Oh, man.
In India, men can blank just via text.
Men can blank just via text.
In India, men can blink just via text.
Disrobe.
That doesn't make a lick of sense.
Well, there's robots that exist these days that if you were to, like, give a command to, like, in Siri, they could operate a certain series of tasks that would involve you disrobing.
That's insane. What are you even talking about? That's insane. Try again. Try one more.
In India, men can blank just via text.
Just via text. Well, I was going to be like, quit, but I guess technically we could do that.
Yeah, I mean, you could, I guess.
Right, recommended. How about... Ooh, no, that's not it. How about poop?
I, again, do not know in what world that would be possible, but we'll just go with
that. Well, you could, install a chip. You could,
okay, so you're an idiot. The answer is get a divorce. Get a divorce just via text. It's apparently a controversial clause in Sharia law that allows husbands instantly divorce their wives by uttering the word talaq, T-A-L-A-Q, 3 times. That's
wait a minute. Yeah. Wait a minute. So it's like spumoni and like semi-pro, and you just need to know the word, and suddenly you're out of it? Like,
apparently that's the way that it works. All you got to do is send a text, and it works. It means nothing. They're trying to ban it, according to The Guardian. But
weird how you found that article, printed it out, and then broke your computer.
Well, I am no Muslim, sir, so it's not going to help me very much. In Birmingham.
Of course.
Criminal jailed after 153rd. Blank.
Ooh.
Criminal jailed after 153rd blank. Getting their money's worth.
Right. No. Well, okay. So this is important, because if it's at all a crime, you don't need 153 of them.
I'm not sure. I'm not going to say. I'm not giving anything away.
I would presume, at least. Criminal, just really
criminal
lax
jailed after 153rd.
Wait, criminal, you said.
Criminal jailed after 153rd.
In theory, you know. Okay, I got this. This has got to be it. After he insisted for the 153rd time that oatmeal raisin cookies are better than chocolate chip.
Yeah, that's not a crime. That's just repeating fact. Why don't you try again there, Kyle?
Interesting. 153. Maybe that's the key. No, it's probably not. 153rd time. Jailed.
Criminal jailed after 153rd blank.
I guess. Eating dirt.
Yeah, that's... I don't understand how that would rhyme.
Well, if it's not his dirt.
Well, that's fair. That would be a different thing. Criminal jailed after 153rd pickpocketing offense. Yes, after
hold on.
153 strikes, a British serial thief dubbed by the media as the pickpocket queen of Birmingham is finally out. This according to Fox News, which, you know, it's got to be true.
Right.
Margaret Johnson was sentenced to 30 months in the slammer after admitting to 6 thefts Friday in front of a court in Birmingham. The 40-year-old, who has no fixed address, has 153 offenses to her name.
And only one incarceration.
Apparently. It took 153 for them to finally get her.
Yeah,
you should see
the
picture. She's a very unfortunate-looking woman. And finally...
That's the question. Hold on. Mm. Was she caught and not jailed 153 times? Or was this some, estimation they've done? Like, how do they know it's 153 if they didn't jail?
I just closed the story. You would do that after I just closed the story.
Well, you get what I'm asking.
I understand. I do understand the reason for asking the question. They, unfortunately, do not appear to provide the details of such a thing.
WTF reporting right there.
Right, it really is. Here it says you can click for more from the BBC. Maybe the BBC will have more. Let me go visit the BBC. See, I'm not really reporting the story, Kyle. I'm just trying to get you to guess line. That's the entire extent. You did not, actually. You did not. Calling the security cameras.
Even by her own despicable standards, she is stupid. So, yeah, they don't have any explanation.
Maybe it was just kind of like a cheeky thing she did. Like, she pickpocketed them and been like, hey, gotcha.
Right, here's and they just gave it back, right? So it was all very silly, right. And now it's become more of a crude type of thing. Yeah, I don't know a lot about the pickpocketing queen of Birmingham. Believe it or not, not something I've really studied up on. Finally, this is according to the Detroit Free Press, and it's not related to banning football coaches from dunking on their children, which is apparently something that occurs in Michigan. And maybe your boy should get a handle on himself. But
you saw the coach block the kid, right?
The what?
You didn't see the toddler, like the preschool basketball coach in full regalia, like in a suit and tie. His jacket off, like the kid gets the ball and starts running towards the other hoop to shoot, and he runs off the sideline. When I say run, like he sprints towards this kid and just tosses his
shot. So are you trying to make Jim Harbaugh seem better based on other assholes?
No, I was just more or less honoring this real man of genius, you know?
Right. Well, of course you would think highly of that person. Jim Harbaugh, did you, I mean, so I'm assuming you read the story.
Yeah, you're wrong. I don't read it.
You're an idiot. So John Harbaugh was on the Peter King podcast this week and told a story of playing basketball with Jim and their daughters and their wives last summer. And Jim, of course, because your boy's a maniac, treated it like it was a real game, scored all of the points for his team, did not let kids touch the ball, and then said to John afterwards, after they won, hey, John, have you ever won anything? Yeah.
But I just want to ask you something.
Yeah.
Did they win?
They know what, Kyle? You're right. They did win, which is one more time than Michigan has won a Big Ten title under Jim Harbaugh. So he's got that going for him, which is nice.
Well, he's only had 2 years. But to be fair, I think this is something you should be lauded for. I mean,
yeah, of course you do.
We had an advisory basketball tournament when I was in high school. Like, we had a thing where, like, set up by, like, you know, advisory groups.
I don't know what that means.
Assistant basketball, because you know exactly what that means. You know, like homeroom kind of thing.
Whatever.
And one of the assistant basketball coaches, who's a character to say the least, would take this tournament so seriously. Like, he would block girls. And, like, yell pieces afterwards, like, with up in a Ray Allen cutoff T-shirt and a headband. And mind you, he's not in peak physical form, so it made it all the more entertaining. But, you know, that reminded me of that. And I just like, I like coaches and competitors who are not willing to stoop their level and play down or whatever the whole thing is, you know?
Right, right. Act normal human beings. Right.
You want to, I think you misheard me.
No. You don't want him to act like a normal human being, right? No, I know. I totally get it, right? Like Dick Harbaugh. Huh. Like old...
I don't know if you remember. You admitted
like
it.
Old Dickie Harbaugh. Dickie Harbaugh.
Yeah, that's weird.
Dickie Harbaugh, no doubt about that. Finally, in Michigan, Michigan hunters banned from luring bears with blank.
You know, I know Michigan.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know Michigan.
Yeah.
And if it breathes and walks, whether on four legs or two, in Michigan, it loves Meijer. So I'm going to say Meijer coupons.
I have no idea what that is. I have no...
M-E-I-J-E-R. Meijer. It's like Walmart.
Yeah, okay. Well, whatever that is, that's not the answer. So try one more time. Michigan hunters banned from luring bears with blank.
It's not Meijer.
Again, still don't really know where it is, but...
It's a wonderful department store. I hope you didn't just give them too much advertising. They lured them with... Oh, man, are you kidding me? This is too easy. Honey.
No, but I like where your head's at. It's actually chocolate. It's chocolate. Who knew? No longer allowed to lure bears with chocolate. There you go. Let's finish this for today.
What about white chocolate? That's not really chocolate, right?
Well, so you actually want them to lure them with Jason Williams, the former Sacramento King. You want them to just stick Jason Williams out there in the woods and say, hey, bears, we have white chocolate for you. That's what you think they should
do. Or in front of a Meijer.
Nah, right in front of whatever the F a Meijer is. I still don't understand that. Anyway, let's wind this down because I think people have given up on the sound quality by this point. Let's get a tidbit of the day. Tidbit of the day is brought to you by our friends at Baltimore Boxing. La La Land comes up on Thursday, March 30th.
It's at Michael's 8th Avenue in Glen Burnie. Get your tickets right now by going to BaltimoreBoxing.com. What you got?
All right. Well, the Mount Saint Mountaineers will attempt to stake claim to a chance to be the first 16 seed to beat a 1 seed by beating New Orleans tonight. That would be them advancing on.
Yeah, they would maybe have to do a little bit here, yeah.
Right, yeah. But there aren't that many more interesting statistics than the ones I used when they won the conference championship. So, how about Vince Carter? Carter shot a perfect 8-for-8 from the field in the Grizzlies' win against the Bucks last night, including a perfect 2-for-2 from the free throw line, giving him 24 points with that performance. He became the second player ever to post at least 24 points on just field goal attempts, joining Sam Pins, who did so for the Sonics in 1997. That 4-point performance by the 40-year-old Carter made him the sixth player in NBA history to score 20 or more points the age of 40 or older.
Yeah,
The other five?
I have no idea. Robert Irish?
He's one of them.
Is he really? Is he really? That's pretty funny.
The one I was like, you'll miss this one.
No, that's the only one I could think of because he's the only one that I knew that played that long. Tim Duncan reach 40?
I don't know if he did, but he is not on the list.
He's not on the list.
That means he probably didn't reach 40 because I'm sure he had 20 points every year.
You would assume so, right? It's Tim effing Duncan. You know what? What about when Michael Jordan was playing with the Wizards?
Oh, yeah, that happened.
Hell yeah. There you go. I like that. I don't know. I don't know.
These guys are all pretty well thought of.
Monty Ginobili's not 40, is he?
No. You're not thinking well thought of enough.
Well, they're all well thought of. Karl Malone.
He's one of them.
Wow, I couldn't have sworn that he played at 40. I'm trying to think of guys that I know played at
40. He was the Lakers, probably.
Yeah. Well, then what about Steve Nash?
Not on the list.
Not on the list.
I don't think he got the 40.
How many am I missing?
You are missing three.
Two.
My apologies, two.
You want to give me a hint?
Sure. Ooh, how can I make this? Well, they're certainly both Hall of Famers. There's no doubt about that. And they are arguably the best to ever play their positions. As far as, like, the true position itself.
Doesn't really help at all.
Well, I know.
Just tell me. We're going on too long.
John Stockton.
You think he's the best ever point guard?
Like a pure, just passing-only point guard kind of thing.
I mean, I don't know about that.
And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Again, I mean, you think he's the best ever center?
Arguably.
I mean, I don't even...
I didn't want to defend it.
I mean, they're good players. They're not down there, but I don't know about best ever. All right.
Very good.
Here coming up tonight, totally tubular. No lacrosse tonight. Towson, Iowa State was scheduled and postponed to tomorrow night. Stevenson-Salisbury postponed till later on in the month. As Kyle mentioned, Mount St. Mary will open up the NCAA tournament tonight on True TV at 6:30 against New Orleans. That's followed by Kansas State and Wake Forest at 9. There is a Baltimore player on Kansas State's roster. It's Kamau Stokes. That game is at 9 o'clock. NIT action tonight includes that UNC Greensboro-Syracuse game that everybody's been giggling about. That's a suck on ESPN. The rest of the NIT you can find at glennclarkradio.com. CSN for Wild Capitals at 7. NBCSN for Blackhawks Canadiens at 7:30. NBA TV Pistons Cavs at 7. 76ers Warriors at 10:30. I don't know if you watched any of last night. TNT did all of their coverage, the studio show and the games, had no broadcasters. It was just players. And they did their damnedest. It's just there's a reason why you need broadcasters involved with things. Like, you need somebody to do the broadcasting. It's just awkward. Champions League today on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports 2. Leicester City, Sevilla on Fox Sports 1 at 3:30. Juventus and FC Porto at 3:30 on Fox Sports 2. Premier Boxing Champion Sergey Derevyanchenko, yeah, I know, I'm a big fan. And Kamal Russell at 9 o'clock on FS1. MLBNet has Braves, Phillies 1, Rangers, Diamondbacks at 4, and then World Baseball Classic tonight. Dominican Republic of Puerto Rico at 9 o'clock. The Netherlands and Cuba at midnight. WWE SmackDown at 8 on the USA Network. And 5 Live at 10 on WWE Network. Give me some highlights, non-sports.
Highlights, the Americans is on FX at 10. Bones, you love Bones, that's on Fox at 9. It's off your
I don't really love Bones.
When you hide
I love
you want,
I love fine. My boy John Bones Jones, who's kicked me in like every part of my body in my life.
Similar.
Is it a show about
contract?
Him?
DC's Legends of Tomorrow is on at 9 on the CW. Okay. I don't believe it is. It's Reuters, 10:30, Comedy Central. Very funny show.
It is.
At midnight has just the obligatory mention of these names, and hopefully you know some. Janet Varney, Jonathan Fernandez, and Gabriel Diani. That's the names. Those are names. Neil deGrasse Tyson and Rick Ross package deal on Colbert tonight. Corden, nothing really crazy. Adam Levine is on Fallon. You like him?
I don't, really.
It's crazy. They got Adam Levine and Maroon 5. How did they make that?
That is remarkable. That's hell of a booking.
Ewan McGregor and Zoe Kravitz.
I think we've covered it. I think we've covered
pretty
it.
Pretty much have.
You go to Glenn Clark Radio.
Oh, the Detour tonight as well. That's
oh,
the
yeah,
TV.
The Detour. Very good. All right. Thanks today to Patrick. And thanks also to Sam Cassell Jr. We'll get all that up in the greatest hits section of the Glenn Clark Radio, Dom. Kyle, obviously, because you're home today, you'll be busting your ass to book up tomorrow's show, right? That's the way that's going to go?
Right, because I have nothing else at all and then I need to be doing.
No, I'm very aware of that. So let's get – well, you don't have to do a show for 2 hours a day, so you've got extra time. So we'll work on that. We've got to work on that. All right. We will probably – I think tomorrow we're going to talk to Rich Dubroff. We haven't done that in a little while, so we'll try to do that tomorrow. If you haven't yet, check out my write-up of the Brandon Williams press conference yesterday in Owings Mills. It's up at PressBoxOnline.com. Very emotional day in Owings Mills and felt like the type of win that the Ravens needed. I wrote about it at PressBoxOnline.com. Thanks, everybody. PressBox, everybody. Monumental Sports, all of our great sponsors and partners, UMBC Sports Marketing, Royal Farms, Baltimore Boxing, Chick-fil-A, Nottingham Square, SFMSports.net, the Maryland News Network, as well as the Archdiocese of Baltimore, Wendy's, and Section 336. Thanks to Kyle Ottenheimer, Sad Lonely Man. Follow him on Twitter, at K. Ottenheimer. Follow us at Glenn Clark Radio. We will be back live 10 a.m. tomorrow. We will talk to you then. Enjoy being home with your family today. Duke sucks. Ohio State sucks, too.